Carol the Coach. Sex, love, and relationships. We talk about it here.
Carol the Coach. Compassion with contemporary relevance.
I am a psychotherapist. I can be your personal life coach, and I can help you with your issues. There are no problems too small or too big. You can talk about anything.
Speaker, columnist, radio TV host, and commentator. Carol the Coach brings messages of wellness and empowerment within reach of everyday people every day.
Almost 5 years ago, I lost my soulmate in an accident. He was killed in a plane crash. Life just for me has seemed to stop.
There are groups all over the city. I mean, I teach one. It is a specific way to start thinking so that you shift how you see the world, which then shifts your energy, and then you feel better and you actually see things differently.
Carol the Coach, always available to at carolthecoach.com.
Well, welcome to Carol the Coach. Hey, this is Sex Help with Carol the Coach. It's a show about sexual addiction. And, you know, this is one of those topics that so many people want more information, but they don't know how to go about getting it. And, you know, I have had a lot of different shows in my past. I've been on News Talk Radio here in Indianapolis. I've had three different shows, two FM, one AM. And many of you know that I did the Carol the Coach show with internet radio through blogtalkradio.com. And I have to tell you, this is probably the most exciting show that I've done in terms of a niche. Now, what I mean by that is that this is information that you really can't get anywhere else on the radio. And so we're developing quite a following. I'm getting a lot of emails. We're getting a lot of emails.
Welcome to your
and I have to tell you, it is just amazing how many people are asking questions like, hey, I heard you talk about 12-step meetings on the air. You know, what are you talking about? And so, of course, I do a lot of discussing about meetings that you can go to throughout the country, but there are telemeetings, too. If you're in an area that doesn't have meetings, you can actually get some extra infrastructure support by going to telemeetings, which is a telephone conference, whereby you just join a group of people who are doing the 12 steps and talking about what they need to do to recover from sexual addiction. And I'm a big believer that you have to actually identify a variety of infrastructure if you are going to get healthy. You need a counselor who is a certified sexual addictions therapist. Now, I'm not dogging any of the other counselors. I'm sure there are a lot of good counselors, and certainly there is a whole recovery group of people that are actually recovering from sexual addiction that have made it their passion to be counselors, and I have the utmost respect for them. But I really believe in the certification you can get when you train, when learn about the brain and about the circuitry, the neurocircuitry that occurs when sexual addiction occurs. And then, of course, you're looking at all the different keys to getting help. You know, you're looking at, how do I feel about myself? What do I need to do to relieve myself from shame? Where can I go? What do I read? Who can I talk to? And then you're dealing with couples. And last week we had a very informative show with John and Elaine Leedon, who had written just an incredible book, One in the Spirit, which helped recovering couples develop an infrastructure in their day that promoted healthy sexuality. Now, tonight we have Crystal Hollenbeck, and her topic is going to be on healthy sexuality. And I cannot emphasize how important this is, because I got to tell you, I probably have at least 50 clients that are in the many different stages of recovery or not. You know, they may be coming to see me, but they haven't totally developed the infrastructure, so they're really struggling and they're going back and forth and they're slipping and they're relapsing. But what gets to be a fairly large problem is when they start getting some clean time under their belt, they're recovering, and they want to develop healthy sexuality. And they're afraid to. They're afraid to for a variety of reasons. There's a lot of fear and struggle for these people, primarily because many of them have been advised to become sexually abstinent and not to involve themselves in their own sexuality for fear of relapse or slipping. And a lot of people don't know what they can do to reconnect to each other. They're afraid to act sexual because they don't want their partner to think that they are objectifying them. Or so lots of my couples are in actuality being sexually abstinent, or what we call sexually anorexic. And it's very tough to get back on the right track. And Crystal Hollenbeck is going to be talking about the hope for healing through counseling. And she's going to be talking about healthy sexuality. She's going to be talking about relational intimacy. She's going to be talking about how do you live a life of healthy sexuality when you have led such a sexually addicted life. So I can't wait to talk to Crystal. She's going to be coming on in about 7 minutes. And she has made it her mission to really promote hope, healing, and harmony. She's a Christian, and she believes that every person is valuable, and she really, truly has made it her mission to assist people in sexuality. So this is going to be a fascinating show, and if you think you might have a question for Crystal, I want you to give us a call at 646-595-3284. That's 646-595-3284. I 100% believe that this is an anonymous show. I know many people worry that if they call in, someone may recognize what their voice, their intonation, their question. But I'm here to tell you, anybody who's listening to the show has an issue with sexual addiction. So your question is safe here. And, it's all about dialoguing and finding out what you can do to create the life you definitely deserve. Now, I typically promote, after a certain amount of recovery has occurred, I promote that clients get back into the swing of developing healthy sexuality. And we all know that starts with the brain. That starts with their actual relationship. That starts with intimacy that has nothing to do with sexuality. Intimacy that has to do with honesty and what they want from each other and what their fantasies are. Notice I said fantasies, which is a type of sex, but I don't mean that here. I mean fantasies in that, what are your dreams? What are your aspirations for this relationship? What would take your relationship to the next level? And, I actually have an exercise that I find incredibly helpful for couples. I ask them, on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being your relationship is incredibly healthy. You have good communication. You have excellent sexuality. And 1 being not so much. What number would you give your relationship today? Okay, so they give it a number. 3, 4, 5, 6. And let's say they give it a 6. I then say to them, okay, you gave it a 6, but what would make it a 7? And that breaks it down into chunkable goals. So maybe they say, our relationship's better than average, but not much. For the person that has had a sexual addiction, they more than likely have embedded into their brain certain visuals, certain sounds, certain smells that activate their arousal template. And so what they need to do is reroute their circuitry and create a new arousal template. And I guarantee you that arousal template is not going to be necessarily as exciting right off the bat. But it is going to be more intimate. It's going to be safer. It's going to be more honest. And so if somebody says, yeah, I'd rate our relationship a 6, and I say, well, what would it take to make it a 7? More than likely, what they will say is, oh, I wish we spent more time together. Or, I wish we did things together. Or, I wish we talked in bed together. Maybe that might look like, you know, I'd like to do more cuddling. Or, possibly that would mean, you know, I'd like to start being more playful in bed. And whatever it is, it may be absolutely sexual, or it may be something that actually has to do with the relationship. We talk about how can you tweak it from a 6 to a 7. So if somebody were to say, you know, I'm scared to get back into the sexual swing of things with my partner. I'm scared to trust him or her. Then we might talk in counseling about, well, how do you develop the trust? You know, what would make your partner more trustworthy? Would it be that they needed to be more honest? Or would it be that they'd need to share more information? Would it be that they need to hold you? Or perhaps, as we've all heard it said, the foreplay really needs to begin when a client says, you know, I'd like that person to check in with me twice that day just to see how I'm doing. That would then get my arousal template going, and I would know that I'm being cared about, and that would make me want to be with my partner again. So it's an exciting thing when I work with couples, and especially when they've experienced the trauma of sexual addiction, because truly, sexual addiction creates pain. It creates pain for the addict, and it creates pain for the partner. And, you know, we used to call the partner a co-sex addict. But what we're finding is that that term was really so offensive. I always felt it was offensive. That we are no longer doing that. We're really moving away from that. And we're calling the partner the partner. They may have their own issues. If you're a partner listening to this show, you know you've got your own issues. Don't we all? Doesn't every single person that's married have their own issues? I mean, I said it last week, I'll say it again this week. If you want to get healthy and if you want to grow, get married. Because truly, that is when you're going to have to grow the most. Your partner will trigger every insecurity in you possible. And that's why I always say, it may be the toughest job in the world to be married, but it's also the most fulfilling when you work on your honesty, when you work on your quality time with somebody, and when you work on finding out how you can be of service to that person. That's really what love and intimacy and spirituality is all about. It's being honest and open and loving and taking risks. And I'm not even here to tell you that those risks aren't going to be difficult and may not hurt from time to time. My experience is that it does hurt. There is no guarantee that it won't hurt, but it will help you grow. So be thinking about, as you decide what you want from that perfect spouse, maybe you've got somebody in mind, you're not with someone, but you would really like to develop an intimate relationship, be thinking about what would be the scariest thing about that. Because that more than likely is the place that you need to improve most. And if you've got a partner, if you're the addict and you've got a partner, be thinking about what frightens you. You know, you have walked this journey, and I'm sure that you have learned a whole lot about yourself and about the process of life. So if you've got a question, feel free to call 646-595-3284. And know that you can absolutely ask any question. There is no question that is dumb or there's no question that won't help another person. That's what we know to be true. When you ask something or make a comment, you're helping every single person that is asking or making a comment to. You know, that's the beauty of groups, whether it be 12-step groups or therapy groups, is, you know, when one person's doing their work, hey, the rest of the world is doing their work too. And we love that. So we've got a good show in store for us. Healthy sexuality. I mean, where do you get to hear about people talking about healthy sexuality? It just doesn't happen much. Now, I hope that you had a good holiday weekend, and it certainly was a time to reflect. It was a time to slow down. And one of the things that I know that they advocate in the 12-step program, and we certainly advocate at Strategic Therapies, is time to slow down and to meditate, to spend 5, 6, 7 minutes working on just slowing down, calming down, and seeing what your spirituality has to say, how you can be guided. And, you know, truly, one of the ways to get away from your spirituality and to create kind of a disengagement from life is to run on empty, to be going so fast that you don't have time for yourself. And when we talk about healthy sexuality, we're going to be talking about how do you slow it down? What do you do to make that happen? So I know that you are really going to enjoy Crystal Hollenbeck, who has made it her mission to talk about healthy sexuality and take you on that journey so that you can live the best life ever. Crystal, welcome to Sex Help with Carol the Coach. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Well, I so appreciate the fact that you have made it your mission to help people with their sexuality. This is a tough area for most people and clearly not an easy one to talk about. So I always appreciate a guest who wants to do that. Tell me a little bit about your counseling, what you do, and what made you go into this field.
Well, what happened was I was seeing a lot of couples, and I use a program called Prepare and Enrich as the basis for my couples program. And what I was finding is sexuality and sexual issues were coming up with every single couple. So that got me started, and then I was having individuals come in that were coming in for other issues, but as I started to talk to them, some of them were revealing for the first time to me their sexual behaviors or a history of sexual abuse. And so I started to just notice that I needed to get more training in these areas to be able to help my clients. So I am a graduate of the Florida Postgraduate Sex Therapy Institute. I started there to get certified in sex therapy. Then I realized sex therapy is not really recognizing sex addiction. And my clients were coming in with definite addictions. And so that's what sent me on the journey to become certified under Patrick Carnes for sex addiction. And what I've learned through that in treating them is healthy sexuality coming out of dysfunctional sexuality, sexual abuse, sexual addiction, all of these issues, the healthy sexuality is really, I think, the most important part of your plan to live holistically well. And it's just like with any addiction or any issues, you spend so much focus on recovery and getting healthy, but then you have to have a plan after that to live the rest of your life. And so I love working with people to really get them to have a plan, because I believe to live healthy sexually, you have to have a plan. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah, so what would that plan possibly look like?
Well, on my website, I actually have a page called Healthy Sexuality. It's under the Counseling tab. And I kind of have made it easy for my clients. I've put it in the form of an acrostic. So I have healthy sexuality, listed down there. And here's what it says. Healing every aspect of yourself leads to the hope and harmony you desire and deserve. And that includes a support system, exercising your mind, body, and spirit, x-raying your thoughts, emotions, and behaviors, understanding your sexuality, having a realistic plan with boundaries, learning to love yourself and others, and then intimacy, both relationally and sexually, trust, which includes responsibility and reliability, and then your choices equals your consequences. I love for them to be able to get the confidence to know that they can make healthy choices sexually, and that they can have a plan.
And so for anybody who's listening right now, what Crystal has done is she has broken down the word healthy sexuality, and she has actual words that reflect all the ingredients that go into actually healthy sexuality.
Exactly.
And so truly, you said there needs to be a plan. So when you say something like a support system, what are you looking at?
Well, everybody needs somebody. And what we learn through recovery of any kind is that we have to have a support system in place. For people who are in sex addiction recovery, oftentimes that means a weekly support group meeting. That might mean having a sponsor. And that might mean a lifetime of doing that. It also means being around other people that are supportive of you. You can't continue to be around people who are abusive to you in any way, people who do not support you, people who are acting out in ways that are unhealthy. So oftentimes, that is a very difficult struggle, because sometimes you have to find new friends. Sometimes you have to set up healthy boundaries with family members. So building that support system for yourself, and it looks different for every person, is really the first step to having healthy sexuality.
Well, and possibly if that support system is lacking in your actual spouse. I mean, certainly I have a lot of couples whereby the partner is still very traumatized, and they can't seem to let go of the anger and resentment they feel from having been betrayed in so many ways for such a long period of time. And when that occurs, obviously that means that for me at least, I have to spend some individual time with that person and really help them to ascertain his or her supports and get them to a place where they need to give up some of the anger and the resentment, you know, because they're not going to get healthy with their spouse, and they're not going to be able to rebuild that trust if that resentment is in the way.
Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. And what we recommend is what's called a therapeutic separation. Oftentimes when there's trauma that's taking place with sex addiction, or oftentimes two people have different issues that they're dealing with, or an affair is discovered and trust is broken. And so there's a lot of things that could go on with the couple itself. And so we recommend that they have a six-month therapeutic separation to do exactly what you're talking about, so that each person is working on their own individual issues. They're also coming together as a couple over that time and addressing issues, so that they each can decide how the relationship is going to go further once they actually get healthy and are able to think clearly about that.
Well, and I like that being time limited, because clearly sometimes when people actually take that separation, it feels very indefinite to them, which can be a real negative. And if they have a time limit, at least they're working towards a goal. It doesn't mean they have to meet that, but it's nice boundaries from which to work under.
Yes, and I found that especially spouses find real comfort in that.
Oh, I bet. Absolutely. And I would also think that it decreases some of the shame that naturally occurs for the addict when the spouse is so angry and bitter and understandably hurt and resentful and scared and betrayed.
Yeah.
You know, that just triggers the shame, which then triggers more avoidance, which then triggers more separation. I mean, it can be a very vicious cycle. So you might advocate a therapeutic separation, and you've had a lot of success with that?
I have. I really have. And the spouses, a lot of times, they're so traumatized when things are first revealed to them that, you know, we recommend that they don't make any decisions right away, that they give themselves some time, because even though we're dealing with something very difficult, such as sex addiction or infidelity or something that just totally breaks the trust of a relationship, there are a lot of other reasons that couples decide to stay together. So once they have some time to really heal and really progress with therapy addressing these issues, then they're at a better place to make a decision whether they are going to stay in the relationship or if they're going to end it.
Makes total sense. If you have a question for Crystal Hollenbeck, give us a call at 646-595-3284. No question too dumb. I know it's a tough subject, but it really, this is your time to invest in yourself and talk with an expert who obviously has made it her passion to bring couples together and develop the sense of healthy sexuality. So I know, Crystal, that you oftentimes say that there is a number one enemy of healthy sexuality. Can you share with us what that is?
Yes, I believe the number one enemy of healthy sexuality is secrets.
Mm.
I think secrets will destroy you. They will destroy a relationship. And if you hold secrets, it really will prevent you from being healthy sexually.
Okay, so how then do you help a couple whereby there is one person who is absolutely terrified to be honest with their spouse?
Well, you know, this happens a lot with sex addiction. Sometimes they will get caught, something will be revealed, and then basically that's not everything. Oftentimes we find that there's more that will come out later as we start the recovery process. Also, there are secrets of shame. Perhaps they were abused in childhood, or they were neglected in some way. And so there's even secrets that are related to their own experiences and abuse, not counting the secrets that they've held of what they, how they've acted out and has hurt their relationship. And so with dealing with couples with sex addiction, we call it disclosure. And we wait for that disclosure until we make sure that both people are in counseling themselves, and that it can be done in a setting where they both have a support system, and that we feel that both the addict and the spouse are ready for that, that they each have their individual therapist, that they've been prepared for that, and that they're you know, able to handle that once it is disclosed. So it can be quite a process, and also we can have several disclosures depending on the healing process of the individuals. So it's very important, though, that all of the secrets do come out if the couple is going to stay together. The only time that we wouldn't recommend that absolutely everything be disclosed is if both are not in therapy, if they are in the middle of a divorce or something to that nature, then we would want to make sure that, you know, everyone involved is protected and getting counseling before we would do that.
Yeah, so what do you do for a spouse who does not feel like he or she needs individual counseling?
Well, that happens, and sometimes they don't come right away because, you know, they have the attitude of, you know, let's be honest, this is their problem. They're the one that did it. They're the one that has the issues. They're the one doing wrong. I don't need the therapy. They do.
Mm-hmm.
So I've seen that happen, but once they actually see their partner getting healthier, actually being committed, especially when they go to inpatient and they take it serious. They go to inpatient treatment, they're working on their own sobriety. Oftentimes inpatient facilities will have a family time where family members can come in and they're educated on the process. Once that starts to happen, they feel more at ease and realize that they can seek therapy as they're educated about different issues related to this. It gives them a better understanding. And also, once they start, when you're traumatized, you can develop PTSD. You start to develop several issues yourself. So even realization that they need help themselves just comes about naturally from just dealing with being traumatized over the sex addiction itself or whatever they have found out.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, so oftentimes we see where the partner not only has been traumatized by the sexual addiction, but may have sexual abuse in his or her past, which means they're re-traumatized from childhood of origin issues. And, you know, so they may have a whole lifetime of trauma that they're dealing with that comes out with their spouse. So I know that can be very, very difficult, and you referenced hospitalization. And when do you typically decide that somebody might benefit from a hospitalization?
Well, I recommend it when they are absolutely acting out and can't seem to be faithful to the weekly meetings. They're not showing up for their therapeutic sessions with me, they're not attending their 12-step programs, when they're not actively involved in their own healing process and seem to really struggle with that,
mm-hmm.
and when it's newly revealed, oftentimes they just feel overwhelmed. And so a lot of times I'll recommend inpatient treatment at that time. It's always up to the client if they choose to go or not, but I found it to be very very, very helpful for clients who, you know, they've had years and years of these behaviors. So it's very difficult for them to break that cycle and to even understand a lot of what's going on and related to why they're acting out whenever you're just coming to a private practice setting once a week.
Well, absolutely. And sometimes they need to remove themselves geographically from everything to really focus on themselves. So good point that it's whether they're not working their program or they need something more intensive to get them going. So now I want to ask you, what is the difference, in your opinion, working with couples between relational intimacy and sexual intimacy?
Well, I get asked that a lot with my couples, and the way I explain it is that relational intimacy, it involves being vulnerable, it involves being transparent, it's an intellectual connection, it's based in communication with each other, there's an emotional connection, you get so in tune with each other. Stephanie Carnes, I was in a CSAT training with her, and she said that intimacy is really into me you see. And I love that because we really have to be transparent and let somebody in to be intimate with us relationally, just as we have to put the work and effort into getting to know them in an intimate way. So mm-hmm. I think it's reciprocal. There has to be two people working at the intimacy for it to happen. And then when we throw in the physical aspect of it, of sexual intimacy has all of those relational components in addition to the physical. So sometimes we think that intimacy is just having the physical activity of sexual activity in some way or other, but really sexual intimacy doesn't happen if there's not really a relational connection. And so I don't believe that you can have sexual intimacy without understanding what relational intimacy is.
Well, and I think that that is a hard concept for most married people, let alone married people who have trauma and abuse and betrayal in their own lives. So, you know, into what you say, into me you see intimacy, boy, that may take years of developing the trust in just a normal relationship, let alone a relationship where the trust has been broken. So relational intimacy seems like it needs to be a predisposition to sexual intimacy, do you think?
I agree with you. I totally agree.
So now if a person struggles with sex addiction and they decide that in order to be healthy, they're going to practice complete abstinence from sex, you know, just like the alcoholic or the drug addict does to be healthy, do you believe that that's a good idea?
No, I don't. That is what we usually refer to as sexual anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's basically just the opposite, where a person will actually go to an extreme to avoid sexuality. And it's just as damaging as sexual addiction. It's just like starving yourself with food or compulsive dieting. Anything that you're doing, when you deprive yourself with sex, it actually can make you feel powerful. It can make you feel in control. So it's another way that's harmful to yourself to be able to try to control your world with chaos. And you know, when we look to addiction, addiction kind of gives us that temporary relief out of our reality or the pain that we're facing. So just as we can act out sexually with sexual addiction, sexual anorexia is the complete, you know, other side of the spectrum, but both are unhealthy.
So there are certainly theorists and therapists that would argue and say, you know, oftentimes sexual anorexia, or I should say sexual abstinence, is a way of decreasing the initial arousal that one may feel that would put them in middle or inner circle behavior. And so you're saying that truly if somebody abstains from sex, that they're following an extreme pattern of power and control, but on the other side, and that is not healthy. Do you ever think it's healthy for somebody to abstain from sex?
I do. I think there are certain times, especially when we're dealing with addiction, I will have my clients sign an abstinent contract with me where
mm-hmm.
they will agree to abstain from certain sexual activities so that they can actually have time to nurture themselves. We know that the brain will regenerate related to addictions in 90 days. There's so much that goes on for them where they have to focus on themselves and self-control and avoiding. So there's definitely times where abstinence is very therapeutic. Even in dealing with sex therapy issues where we may have sexual dysfunction or chronic illness, or maybe they're grieving or they've suffered a trauma as a couple or a family, and sometimes they have, had long abstinences of sexual activity while they're rebuilding their relationship. And then we integrate the sexual sensate focus where they're just touching the skin and not actually having intercourse to rekindle and rebuild that relationship. Oftentimes I'll use activities like that when they're in recovery from an affair or something has traumatized or broken trust in the relationship. So there's definitely times for that. Sexual abstinence.
So break that down, Crystal. If you had a couple that was dealing with that, and how might you use that sensory focus? I mean, what would you actually ask a couple to participate in?
Well, a sensate focus exercise is where they would be touching the skin. It would be sensual. Sometimes it involves rubbing oil, touching the arms, the legs. Sometimes it involves no touching of the genitalia at all, as well as no actual intercourse. Sometimes when I'm dealing with victims, this is a great exercise when I have somebody that comes in who's really experiencing some sexual problems with their spouse,
mm-hmm.
and it's related to the fact that they were sexually abused. So we will go through sexual abuse recovery together, and then they have to learn sometimes to allow their partner to touch them sexually, and we do a lot of trauma work so that they can be touched sexually without going back to a flashback of a memory when they were sexually abused, or without that high anxiety that comes with it. And so the way that starts, a lot of times I'll use sensate focus so that they can learn to be intimate and touch each other without the actual sexual behavior. And then it progresses to the sexual intimacy. But it's more about getting in tune with each other, with enjoying each other, and reducing that anxiety so that they can reconnect in a healthy way.
Well, and I would imagine that in doing those kinds of exercises, it really promotes that essential ingredient of safety.
Yeah.
Because the client, the not the addict, but really the woman or man that is the partner would more than likely feel very relieved that it isn't going to go into a sexual nature.
Yes, very much.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes sense. So, okay, there are periods where you might ask somebody to abstain from sex, but you do not believe that that's the end-all, be-all in regards to dealing with your own sexual addiction, because, again, it's just the extreme of sexual addiction itself.
Exactly.
Now, what do you think is the hardest issue to overcome for people who have had sex addiction, you know, when they're learning to live that life of healthy sexuality?
Well, I think the hardest thing is fear. Overcoming the fear, there's so much of it, especially when you have come out of recovery, you've made change, you're doing so well, and then you have to look at actually having a relationship for the first time that's going to be completely different than anything you've ever known. So there are those fears, the fear of dating, how will you date right, the fear of relapse, the fear of disclosure, telling somebody that you've had these issues. The fear of failure. There's so many fears involved with going forward with healthy sexuality if you've never lived a life that included healthy sexuality. And Patrick Carnes, in I think it's in the Recovery Zone book, he actually talks about attachment is the antidote to fear. And I believe that's really true. I see that with healthy sexuality, if you can really learn to connect and communicate and develop an attachment relationally, that plays a huge part in overcoming your fear of entering into a healthy relationship with another person after you've been through sex addiction recovery.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And truly, you know, I always say in healthy relationships, conflict is normal, necessary, and natural, and will breed more intimacy. And I would suspect that when you share with your partner a fear that you're having and you're working on healthy sexuality, that too is going to bring you two closer, because there's going to be a natural empathy that develops as part of that attachment.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
So then the hardest issue to overcome is fear, and your number one recommendation for somebody who's feeling that fear or those fears, because obviously it's probably going to be plural, is what?
Well, you have to face them. You have to face them with a plan. And that's why I say that healthy sexuality truly is a plan. It's a plan that you develop for yourself. Every person is different. Every person's experiences are different. How people view sexuality, what that means to them, is going to be different. And so, being that I'm a cognitive behavioral therapist, I see a lot of people for anxiety. And, of course, we know that overcoming fear is facing those fears. That's what we have to do. And so I believe it's the same thing with healthy sexuality. You have to face those fears. You have to take a risk. You have to put yourself out there. You do have to date again or reconnect with your spouse. You have to take a risk that you may fail, and you have to be honest with yourself. You have to have a realistic plan, which I think that's really important. I think when we try to give ourselves a plan that we can't ever live up to, we set ourselves up for failure.
So what would that realistic plan look like?
Well,
for a client that you might have.
Okay. It's different for everyone, but a realistic plan would involve having boundaries of, you know, what you can and can't do, knowing your past behavior. You've already worked through all of that. So you want to look at being realistic. What you know that you're vulnerable to, where you know that you have had issues in the past, it's going to involve some avoidance of certain things. Then it's going to also involve you having a realistic plan of going forward in the future. That's gonna all be based on whatever your recovery process has been. So, for example, your sexual history may have involved an unhealthy sexual activity with multiple partners, with men, with women. You may have been confused about your gender identity or your sexual orientation. You may have had a lot of confusion about that. You may have been abused as a young child, so you don't really understand the attachment issue that takes place with sexuality that's healthy. So we have to look at what's specific to you. And then I always encourage my clients to also dream a little bit. Where do you see yourself? What does it look like to you? What would healthy sexuality in a relationship look like? And I'm always surprised that everybody tells me something different. So that's the reason I always ask that question, because I may think I know what's best for my client, but they may have completely other ideas. So I get them to share what do they think, and then we talk about, okay, from where you are now to getting to where you'd like to be, what's a realistic plan that's going to get you there? And then we develop that together.
Well, that makes sense, and that helps me to understand that realistic plan. Have you been doing this for how long?
I have only been doing this for a couple of years. This is my second career. I was actually a stay-at-home mom for many, many years. And so I've only been doing it for about 3 years now.
Okay. Well, certainly you have this stuff down. There is no doubt about it. And I always am amazed that oftentimes the people that seem the most comfortable and natural with this are from an unusual past, a stay-at-home mom, for example, or Cynthia Powers. I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she's a nun. Who now does this work, and it's just absolutely amazing out of the Chicago area. So let me ask you a couple more questions before we end, because so oftentimes the recovering addict is ready to do whatever it takes. You know, they've been longing to rebuild the trust, but the spouse of a sex addict is stuck and may even be questioning whether they should stay in a marriage. Do you find that many of your couples have this dynamic where, is it really fair to expect a spouse of a sex addict to stay in the marriage?
You know, that's such a good question, and I address this issue with every couple that I see, because a lot of times the focus is on the addict and it's not on the spouse, and realizing that the spouse has the right to make decisions as well, just as the person who's struggling with the sex addiction has those rights. But a lot of times the focus gets put on the recovery process for the person who has the sex addiction. And so that is really why, again, I will recommend and ask. Usually it's her or him. I have both. I have several women that are also struggling with sex addiction. So I will ask the spouse to not make any major decisions for 1 year and to start therapy on their own. And, you know, sometimes that'll involve the six-month therapeutic separation. Sometimes it does not. It depends on the couple. And like we talked about before, sometimes that involves inpatient, sometimes it doesn't. But she definitely has got to work through issues, the partner does, before she can make that decision or he can make that decision. Because a lot of times, like I said, I think the most important thing is that they realize that they're individuals. But there's a lot of reasons that people stay together. And I have couples, many couples, that stay together. You know, they have children. Oftentimes, this won't be revealed until 20-some years into the marriage. So they've got a long history together.
Yeah, I find that a lot of times they're financially locked together, and they just really don't want to separate and separate all their finances and their homes and all sorts of things that they've lived in for 25, 30 years. It's very, very difficult.
Exactly. And a lot of times these couples have a lot of good strengths in their relationship. There's oftentimes a lot of things that they enjoy, and the spouse truly is completely shocked to find out about this betrayal or this secret life. And so there's a lot of reasons for them to stay, but until they can really get into therapy and work through the issues and really get healthy, they really can't make that decision.
Mm-hmm. I agree. So now, how does spirituality affect a person's ability to live a healthy life sexually?
Well, spirituality, I think, is an important part of us just being healthy holistically. And the way that it plays a part for healthy sexuality is most of the time when we are growing up, our parents teach us about sexuality in some way or another that's usually related to their value system that comes from their religious or spiritual beliefs. So there can be a struggle going on. Maybe you're engaged in behaviors that are conflicting with what you've been taught about sex, and maybe they conflict with your spiritual beliefs about sexuality. Then I also see people who, unfortunately, they have been abused by people in their church. They've been gone to their, maybe it's been their youth pastor that has abused them, or a pastor or somebody else in the church that they looked up to. So they really struggle with spirituality. Part of your healthy sexuality plan involves your spiritual aspect of your life, what that means to you. How does that conflict or coincide with what you're doing sexually? So it's a very important part of just choosing your healthy sexuality plan and just being healthy in your whole well-being.
Yeah, and I think for many it feels like a double betrayal, because if they are sexually abused or traumatized by somebody within the church, it can feel as if God has betrayed them or allowed this to happen, depending on what they believe about God and what they think is an intervention that could have occurred. And so, you know, I do believe that spirituality is really having that faith that things are occurring for a purpose, and that you have somebody that you can lean on, and that person can get you through, you know, your higher power, your God can get you through whatever you're dealing with. But it's not uncommon for a lot of my couples to kind of wonder, where was God throughout all this? So I know it's a tough issue for a lot of people who continue to struggle with, why is this happening to them? Now, for someone struggling with sexual issues, what do you think is the most important thing you think that they should know?
Well, I think that they should know that there is help. There is so much shame that goes along with this. There's so many struggles. It's always a multiple issues usually that we're dealing with. And so the person can be overwhelmed and maybe think that, you know, they can never get help. Maybe they feel like they've been doing this a long time. They can't change. They would die before they would want anybody to know what they've done. And I just love for people to know that there is help. You can overcome anything. There is so many people out here now that are certified in the field, that are specialists in this area. There's help available. And not only can they overcome the sexual addiction and learn to be healthy, but they can really practice healthy sexuality. And it's never too late. And there's a support system out there for them. So I think really just the most important thing I would like people to realize is, no matter what you've experienced or what you've been through, that there is help available.
Well, I 100% agree with you. And I always tell my clients, and I feel this for ourselves, is that we are pioneers in the field of sexual addiction. There is no doubt about it. And so are they, because in the past, you know, there weren't many resources for these people. And 20 years from now, there will be so many more resources. But truly, with Skype and with telemeetings and with the 12-step meetings that are available. And, you know, I always just reference Facing the Shadows and the SAA book and resources that they can get to start making the changes in their lives. And it sounds like you and I both are using something very unusual but very effective with people who have been through trauma, and that is EMDR. So tell our audience a little bit about how you use EMDR with trauma and abuse and sexual addiction.
Oh, I'm so glad that you brought that up, because that's such an important part of the healing process. EMDR is a fantastic protocol. It's actually been approved by the American Psychological Association now for treating PTSD. And basically what it is it's simply bilateral stimulation where the right and left side of the brain is stimulated at the same time while we process our thoughts and our emotions. So, for example, when someone is traumatized, I like to explain it. It's kind of like our brain is a file system, and something will happen, and a file gets put in the filing cabinet, but it might not be put in the right drawer. And sometimes when we're traumatized, we can only handle it in a certain situation. We can't really process it completely. And I have clients that will come to me, and they'll know something. They can think it and know it about it, but it keeps them in a state of emotional turmoil. It keeps them upset. It keeps interfering with their life. And the reason for that is because they've not processed their thoughts and their emotions about what's happened at the same time. Once they're able to do that, it just puts that file, so to speak, in the right drawer. It lets them process what's happened. It lets them work through it emotionally. It lets them work through it with their thought process. And it doesn't change what's happened. It doesn't change the truth of what's happened. It doesn't make them forget what's happened. But it no longer allows it to interfere with their life.
It doesn't seem to have the impact or the intensity that it once did, because, again, the file is put in the proper place.
Exactly.
Yes, and so on an average, when you're looking at the people that you're working with, and I know that this is a tough question, but how many EMDR sessions do you think it takes for people to work through a large part of their trauma?
Well, EMDR actually works very quickly. However, that's not a cut-and-dry question, because every individual is different.
Mm-hmm.
Oftentimes, when we will do EMDR to treat something, something else will come up, and so we go ahead and treat that. And then we have people, if you have someone who comes in and they've had a history of trauma, you know, I've had people that were abused by their family, abused by church members, abused in their adult life. They've had multiple traumas over a period of time. It's going to take a little longer, even with EMDR, because you want to be sure that you're addressing each of the issues that are affecting that person's life. However, I use EMDR with almost every single client that I see, and
yep,
it's amazing. It really is amazing how much it helps them to heal those painful experiences that they've had.
Yeah, I don't like to call it magic, but it is magic in so many ways.
Yeah.
And so, Crystal, for our listeners who want to see what you're all about, they can go to Crystal, C-R-Y-S-T-A-L, Hollenbeck, HOLLENBECK.com. You've got a wonderful website, very peaceful, really made me feel relaxed. It was inviting. I sat there and thought, this is somebody I would want to work with. If they want to get a hold of you via phone, how can they contact you?
Well, you can call me on my cell phone at 352-643-1297, or you can call the office and schedule an appointment at 407-522-9919. And feel free to send me an email. There's a place on the website on the contact page that you can email me directly if you have any questions, or I'd be glad to talk to you for 15 minutes at no charge on the phone if you have any questions for me that I can help you with.
Well, thank you so much. This has been very informative, and it gives couples a lot of hope that they can reignite that sexual, relationship. And so I can't thank you enough, and I would encourage anybody to contact Crystal and find out more about her services.
Thank you, Carol, so much for what you're doing. I love your show. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Yes, obviously this woman knows a lot about the field of human sexuality and what it takes renew in a healthy way a sexual relationship. And I just loved her acronym for healthy sexuality. I mean, again, it talks about boundaries. It talks about x-raying your feelings and your thoughts. it encourages you to look at the desire and what you deserve in life. So I highly recommend that you contact her. You can always email me at carolthecoach@AOL.com, and I'll be happy to send you that information. So thanks for listening to tonight's show. And as I end every show, there will be only one of you at all times. So fearlessly be yourself. And remember that that is 100% what Crystal said in terms of one of the enemies of wood. And we're here to help you live your healthiest life. So have a great week. We'll see you next week when we have more guests. Ben Galloway, who's worked in the field of addiction and trauma treatment since 1989, he's going to be talking about how do you recover, what do you do to work on love addiction and love avoidance. We'll see you next week. Have a great one.